So the things that, you know, what I would see in my coworkers are the same things that I would see in patients who have experienced trauma, you know, outside.
Hello, everyone. I am Isis Garcia Rodriguez, and this is Tech Talk. Trauma-informed care creates a roadmap to resilience by moving away from a deficit model in which we ask you what's wrong with you to a strengths-based perspective where we ask what happened to you. In an attempt to reach all audiences, the Brigham and Women's Health Trauma-Informed Care Initiative is using the TikTok podcast platform to continue education and disseminate information on trauma-informed care for healthcare providers, patients, educators, and community members. For a comprehensive list of the 6 TIC guiding principles and 3 implementation domains, according to SAMHSA, please see the 2 graphics that can be found on Twitter at ALO Boston or listen to episode 1 of this podcast. During this episode, we would like to take the time to talk about vicarious or secondary trauma for healthcare providers. With me today is Kelly Carlson. She has her PhD in nursing and is a psychiatric nurse practitioner. She is a professional development specialist and a research associate at McLean Hospital, and she's an expert in violence prevention. So, Kelly, thank you for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thank you, Isis.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing fairly well for a Monday.
Yeah.
How are you?
Good. It's a nicer day out today, not as rainy and cold as it was a couple days ago, so I'm happy about that.
We're holding out for the sun.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
All right. So I know that this is a topic that can be, I feel like sometimes a little bit hard for some people to talk about just because you have to start really thinking about yourself and kind of introspect and think about the experiences that you've had as an individual and also understanding that as a healthcare provider, you will most likely have experienced these experiences. So I think it's important to talk about it. And so we'll jump right in and kind of just looking at the definition and what you consider to be vicarious or secondary trauma. Since it's such a huge topic, what does that look like to you as a provider?
Mm-hmm. Well, I can look at it certainly from several different lenses. I think what I'm going to do today is I'm going to look at it in terms of my current work, which is educating new psychiatric healthcare staff, both nurses and we call them mental health counselors or mental health specialists. So the way, you know, secondary or vicarious trauma may look in a psychiatric setting is maybe a little bit different too, because we assume here that over 90% of our clients have experienced some kind of traumatic experiences. And unfortunately, in our environment, sometimes those traumatic experiences have happened within psychiatric institutions. So I've been around for a long time. I had the pleasure of working with actually the Massachusetts Department of Mental Health when we really had an initiative to reduce restraint and seclusion in our settings, which were being acknowledged back in the early 2000s or late 1990s as re-traumatizing experiences. So that's where, you know, I focus a lot of my current education. Bringing, you know, new people into our environments, just giving them a little historical background. But, you know, that's probably when I really started to have an interest and a better understanding of vicarious and secondary trauma, having, you know, participated in, you know, restraint and seclusion, and seeing what that can do to people over time if we don't take good care of ourselves. And we've had changes in those interventions, but, you know, we still have a little ways to go as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, so you were just saying that kind of what got you interested was seeing the impact over time. So what is that impact? What does that look like? Or for people working in your type of setting, what kind of impact does secondary trauma have on an individual?
Yeah, well, you know, and I also struggle with the idea of the individual, because, you know, there's a context here. There's a context to the trauma, and it's on so many different levels. But if I do look at it on the individual level, and I certainly do try to, you know, vaccinate my new employees, you know, just to give them a little heads up that, you know, you're going to experience things that you're not going to experience necessarily, you know, having a cup of coffee down at Starbucks or something. Like, our environments as they are, they're locked doors, we have keys, they can be traumatizing in themselves. Mm-hmm. So I try to give them a little heads up as far as, you know, good self-care. Because what I've seen over time, and why it was so important in the late 90s and early 2000s, is the language of trauma really started to enter our consciousness. Mm-hmm. And I can say that from my own experience, when the light bulb went off for me that I was traumatizing people by using some of these physical interventions. You know, I worked with kids at the time, and, you know, all of a sudden I realized, you know, what I was doing, which everybody was doing, which we thought was the normal thing to do, was actually causing harm, potential harm to other people and to ourselves. Yeah. You know, because it was, some of what we were doing was really, you know, dehumanizing in a lot of ways and punitive. And we've come a long way, mm-hmm. you know, from what I've seen. But on the individual level, certainly people can have reactions, just like if somebody, you know, it's a traumatizing thing to be involved in. And sometimes our units, because of the work we do, they can be kind of overstimulating and, you know, traumatizing for people just to be in them, you know, so.
Yeah. And I think something that's really interesting that you have touched upon is that because there's been this movement away from it where you are doing it in the moment because you know, this is what you were taught and this is how you were educated and trained to go about a certain situation. But now you're realizing later on that, no, I was actually causing harm. And that in of itself is kind of, that's really scary to think that, you know, I thought I was doing the right thing and it turns out I was doing something that was really bad and really harmful to others. So I think that really, when you look at it, like you're saying, this is not only an individual impact, but it also has an impact on maybe the team that you're working on. So can you speak to maybe how, you know, secondary trauma can really lead to things like maybe compassion fatigue or burnout, and how mm-hmm. those things might impact a whole team working together?
Yeah, I think, you know, in some of this, the language, I'm not sure if we have really, you know, burnout, compassion fatigue, certainly we've tried to identify these concepts over time, but they still are things that kind of are amorphous and kind of out there, right? But when I think about burnout and I think about compassion fatigue, and these are things that I try to help our new employees, you know, at least get a little bit of a picture of, it's the same responses that any, you know, any of our patients or clients that may have histories of trauma would be reacting as if, you know, so emotionally withdrawn, irritable, hypervigilant, just on edge, you know, people become less emotionally available. And for our work, you know, really, I think one of the mainstays of our work here is to try to do some reparative emotional work with people, especially in interpersonal relationships and, you know, people's styles. So the things that, you know, what I would see in my coworkers are the same things that I would see in patients who have experienced trauma, you know, outside, because it's a very intense atmosphere to have to work in every day. And that's why self-care is so important, which is something that I try to emphasize. So what happens in environments where people are burnt out and have compassion fatigue in a psychiatric environment, because, you know, managing people and or managing ourselves and, you know, trying to help people grow or transform is really emotionally laden, heavy work. So people aren't available to do that work, or they've taken themselves away because they've, you know, read too many charts about how, you know, children have experienced all kinds of atrocities, or some of our patients have experienced so much in their lives. You know, just being exposed to that on a daily basis can kind of shut our emotions off to the point where we're disconnected ourselves. And when we disconnect, that means that our patients aren't getting their needs met.
Yeah.
So then that can create a sort of a vacuum. And if you know anything about a vacuum, something will fill it. And if we have, you know, people who aren't available to people, then, you know, whatever is, you know, kind of dysfunction is happening will escalate. And then that, ironically, you know, puts people more at risk of needing interventions at a higher level than, you know.
Yeah. So something that you were talking about is how a lot of the times the secondary vicarious trauma might present itself in a very similar fashion that trauma would for a patient or client you're working with. So we have ways to measure trauma symptoms and the impact of trauma on people that we're treating as a provider. But are there any measures or tools that you could use to measure trauma in the context of looking at a provider? Would you use the same ones or would they be different?
You know, it's a good question. I think if we were really trying to identify workplace trauma, so to say, I think that, you know, there, first of all, I don't think there's a lot of great, you know, trauma scales, you know, or trauma-informed care scales. I did find a couple secondary traumatic stress scales, you know, that look half decent, and I can certainly look down the secondary traumatic stress scale to see. You know, the first one is I felt emotionally numb. I mean, so that, you know, I can certainly see that sometimes with people with burnout or compassion fatigue or that kind of thing. It's pretty general. I think it's very important that we address it in our workforce. And if we look at the prevalence of, say, PTSD in people who work in emergency rooms or psychiatric facilities, you know, much higher than the norm. So, you know, these are potentially traumatizing environments that we have to work in. So I do believe that, you know, some type of measurement hopefully would be able to help address some of our needs, maybe more specifically in terms of how we take care of our workforce.
Yeah. And since there aren't too many that are very specific to providers and secondary trauma coming from the workplace, I know that there's also this concept of, you know, don't take your work home and, you know, you shouldn't be impacted by it. But, you know, we are people and, you know, we're emotional beings as well. So what are some ways that people can recognize symptoms or signs of vicarious trauma within themselves? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's hard because, I'm not sure it's the individuals that are going to recognize it. Like if you don't get enough sleep for 2 or 3 days, who is it that's going to recognize you're being affected by it? Usually not you. So I think that in order to address those things as individuals, we have to have good relationships with our coworkers. So our coworker can kind of tap us and say, you know, what's going on with you? You're kind of, you know, you're not available, or you seem a little, you know, edgy today. You have to have coworkers that you develop trust with. And that, you know, again, that's not very different when we're talking about people with just generalized traumatic experiences. So I think you need to have some connection with other people, because I don't think it's going to necessarily be you who's going to notice that you're affected.
Yeah. So, and when thinking about trauma-informed care in vicarious trauma, how does trauma-informed care play a role in vicarious trauma? Is it more of a role in which we see that trauma-informed care is really impacting the amounts of vicarious trauma, or is it that you've already kind of had, that you already have, or is it more impacting in the way that you see that there's, you know, you can acknowledge that there's trauma happening and that it might be affecting you, and then thinking about how do you change the way that you interact with others to make sure that you're not impacted? So I'm just trying to understand if it's like, does trauma-informed care play a role on multiple levels, or is it more of like this one piece? You know, I don't know if you can speak to that.
I think it hits certainly all levels. And again, I have a little bit of trouble with trauma-informed care because I don't know if we've adequately defined it itself. So I think it hits every level. I don't think there's one level in an organization where it's not going to hit. I think what it's done, trauma-informed care, because we've had a focus on it for maybe the past 20 years, is that it's given us a language. So, it helps people if we can do kind of a brief way of describing something. And I think trauma-informed care has given us a language to use and a framework so that at least we can frame this for people they can become more aware of it. That's how I see trauma-informed care kind of, addressing secondary trauma or vicarious trauma, just to explain to people that this can happen.
Yeah.
It's possible that it will happen to you. You know, these are the signs you have to look out for. But you also need adequate support in your environments and people that you can trust and work some of these issues out. Because again, we have these words, trauma-informed care, vicarious trauma. What is it? What does it look like? I think that's a very good question. You know, because in my environment, it's certainly rooted in things like the patient-provider relationship and transference and, interpersonal dysfunction and, emotional dysregulation. So these are, it's part of our language, but now we have this trauma-informed care kind of framework that's given us even maybe a better defined way of explaining these things to employees and making sure that they're caring for themselves and that they're getting good support.
Yeah. So some things that you've already mentioned in regards to like self-care have been, maintaining social relationships and making sure that just your relationships with your coworkers are pretty positive. Are there any other types of wellness activities or things that you would suggest for someone in the healthcare field who may be exposed to trauma through their patients?
Well, exercise for me is always one of the best things. I think that probably has the most evidence behind it as well. So just like we would with a client or patient and, just structure yourself so to make sure that you do all those activities, that help you feel well and able to do your job well. Mm-hmm. And also getting your needs met in your social relationships outside of work. Because that's a huge thing. Oftentimes we see people who might be affected by vicarious trauma also, maybe getting their needs met, their own social needs met at work, which is not, healthy for anyone. So that's another, kind of tip. Yeah.
Yeah. And when you think about things like burnout, we know that burnout plays a role on patient outcomes and positive outcomes for patients, just because if you're not there, it's really hard for you to really make an impact on your patients. So do you feel like making sure that people do, participate in self-care, do you think, I don't know if there's much evidence on it, but I'm assuming it's kind of similar to things like burnout and taking care of yourself in the context of burnout. Does self-care have an impact on patient outcomes?
That's a really good thing. And I think that we need some research on that. Definitely. What kind of self-care activities, and we do, every once in a while we'll have, something like that come through. We'll have a conference where we, get to address those things. But I don't know if there's ever been any really good research behind that or what things, help people the most in staying balanced, especially when they're being exposed to, traumatic experiences in their workplace.
Yeah. So I guess I can, to wrap it all up, I guess the question would be, what's the thing that you want people listening to take away, whether it be about secondary vicarious trauma, whether it be about self-care or trauma-informed care, what's a concept or an idea that you want people to really think about when they listen to this episode?
Yeah. Well, I think probably is that we're all human and we're all vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And I get kind of, I don't know, when I hear people say, well, that stuff doesn't bother me, or, I really worry because I think the idea that, you know, even though we might be the healthcare workers, we're still vulnerable to all of these things. And, you know, to pretend differently, you know, isn't helping anyone. And that we've all experienced some level of trauma, I think, for the most part. And just acknowledging that and, you know, respecting each other's humanity and trying to help work through these, you know, problems that repeated traumas can certainly create for both ourselves as individuals and us as a society. I mean, let's look at the social determinants of health. I mean, that's a good place to start when we look at traumatic experiences, and we can trace it all the way to, you know, healthcare workers, but it's all connected. And to really, you know, to start looking at ourselves and each other as vulnerable human beings that we are, and to do some prevention work.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's really interesting that you brought kind of this perspective from a very specific context mm-hmm. in regards to, you know, your experience with psychiatric nursing and just your experience with research in that particular field. And I really think that you did a really good job just really explaining just kind of the overall impact that not only an individual might experience, but also maybe a team or even on the organizational level, when you think about the way that you know, you have to work with others, whether they be above or below you, you know, in quotes. So I just want to say thank you for making that clear to myself. And I'm sure that whoever is listening would also say thank you. So thank you, Kelly, so much for taking the time to come and speak with me today. I really appreciate your perspective and all the information that you've given me today. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Isis. And I appreciate your interest in this topic. Thank you very much.
For updates throughout the week or to ask us questions, please follow us on Twitter at ALO Boston, and make sure to rate us and leave comments for things that you like, or maybe even some topics that you'd like to see us cover. Don't forget to tune in next week. But until then, we'll be counting down the minutes on TikTok.